11 times over the past 34 years, a 3-year-old thoroughbred arrived at Belmont Park with a chance to win the Triple Crown, and 11 times he failed. A sport in sore need of a superstar hopes that I'll Have Another breaks that jinx on Saturday. The winner of the Kentucky Derby in the Preakness is listed as the odds-on favorite to win the Belmont Stakes, but racing writer Andy Beyer argues that the crowded schedule, the unusual distance, and history all suggest you should put your money on another colt. So, horse players, how do you pick a winner? Speed, pace, breeding? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Washington Post horse racing columnist Andy Beyer joins us now by smartphone from his home in Washington. Nice to have you back.
Hi, Neil. I hope it proves to be a smartphone.
So far, so good, Andy. You are highly skeptical that I'll Have Another is going to be able to repeat his success in the first two races.
No, I didn't say that. I would say that that if you look at the circumstances of this race, if it were just a normal race, you'd say, wow, this horse is so superior to everybody else. He looks like a can't-miss proposition. You know, with the history of the Belmont that we know, and with all of the failures of good horses, and with all of the unpredictable results in recent years, I don't think anybody wants to go out on a limb and say, a horse can't lose. I would say he's supposed to win. I think he'll win. I hope he'll win, but I can't go farther than that.
What makes the Belmont so unusual? Just a quarter mile longer than the Derby.
Well, the distance is a whole different game. And in part, it's a different game because horses in America today aren't bred to go a mile and a half. You know, I was looking back at the 1980s, the horses who won the Kentucky Derby. Every horse had like a solid mile and a half runner in the first two generations of his pedigree. And so when horses, like from the 70s and that from that era, went into the Belmont, they were pretty much mostly equipped, to run the distance. Now nobody is bred for a mile and a half. And so when the horses get into this race, even if they look good finishing it at a mile and a quarter in the Derby, as I'll Have Another did, it's a real unknown factor. I mean, it's kind of a crapshoot to know who's got the genes to go the distance.
The other aspect of it is that the horse's jockey is unfamiliar with Belmont Park, which is, I think, the only track in the country that's a mile and a half.
I don't know what to make of the jockey factor here. I do know that when you look at the history of failures in the Belmont Stakes, a lot of them have been caused by jockey error. And you've had, like great riders like Kent DeSormo and Calvin Burrell just like blow the Belmont. Mario Gutierrez, I'll Have Another's jockey is relatively inexperienced at, at not only at a mile and a half, but at major league racing as well. I mean, maybe that works to his advantage. I mean, maybe he'll come in and say, I've got to do my homework. I've got to, learn about the Belmont. He was very studious before the Preakness, watching, films of, historic races. So, maybe he'll do his homework.
This is a quote from Dwayne Lucas, who's got a horse in the race, the famous trainer, of course. More riders have lost the race than horses, Lucas said. This is from USA Today. It's a difficult racetrack to ride, even if you ride it daily. There's something about it. The adrenaline gets flowing, and they make some mistakes, and most of them misjudge the pace. And there are famous examples you wrote about in a column, I think earlier this week, of jockeys who just decided to move too soon.
Right. Well, it's understandable because in a lot of cases, if you watch the Kentucky Derbies over the years, you see horses make that big, bold move on the turn at Churchill Downs and go on to win, in, you know, very frequently. I mean, that's kind of the winning move at the Derby. But when you take the same horse and try to make that move at the Belmont, the horse might surge to the lead. He's still got to run into the next county. And so that style doesn't work. And jockeys who do make premature moves in the Belmont, you know, are usually dooming themselves and their horse.
As you look at the race, now you are famously a speed handicapper. There's the buyer speed factor that's listed in the Daily Racing Form. That's right. That's your name there.
That is.
And you wrote before the Preakness that your speed analysis, the pace of the race, it looked like there was a ton of early speed, that they would burn themselves up in suicidal fractions, and it was set up for a closer. And you said, despite that, your conviction was you looked at the speed figures and there was no way Bodemeister could lose.
That was not exactly the scenario, but I loved, I loved Bodemeister in the Preakness. And if you said that I'll have another, you know, was a candidate to win the, the Triple Crown, I would have laughed derisively. I was totally wrong about this horse because he just moved to a whole different level in the Preakness. I mean, not only from the speed figure standpoint, where his number, his buyer speed figure went from 101 to 109, but while he had a kind of a perfect tactical setup in the Derby, he overcame extremely difficult tactical circumstances in the Preakness. So, I mean, this horse has just kind of stepped up to a new level. And if he stays at this level, he ought to crush this field. Now, that that's always a big if in the Belmont.
The last time there was a Triple Crown winner affirmed, back in 1978. It was one of the most famous duels in horse racing history. Affirmed and Alidar, Alidar and Affirmed, three times, 1-2 in the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes. Bodemeister was second in the Kentucky Derby, second in the Preakness after a pretty good race. He's sitting this one out.
Well, it was, I think, clear to his trainer, Bob Baffert, that he wasn't a mile and a half horse. If I'll have another, ran him down at the two shorter distances. This was not going to be Bodemeister's best game. But you've got a couple horses in this field, Union Rags in particular, and Dullahan, who ran in the Derby, have been given a breather. They passed the Preakness to point for the Belmont. So, I mean, they're potentially formidable horses unless I'll have another, fires his best shot again.
But history, as you also wrote, suggests we should just bet $2 on all of the 30-1 shots.
Well, the recent history of the Belmont has been like unlike anything I think we've ever seen in a major race. The number of upsets, and I mean not merely upsets, but totally incomprehensible results, has been staggering. And I think that is due to the imponderable nature of the mile and a half factor, that horses do well or do poorly in ways that we couldn't anticipate going into the race. But, I still think in this field, the contention is pretty narrow. I don't see one of the off-the-wall horses winning in here, but I've said that before, too.
Andy Byers with us, horse racing columnist for the Washington Post and the author of, among other books, Picking Winners. And we're asking you, how do you pick winners at the track? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Cal's on the line. Cal's calling us from Norman, Oklahoma.
Yes, thank you for taking the call. I'm a follower of Andy Byers, going back to the early 70s when I used to go to tracks in Maryland. He's a great handicapper. He and Joe Drape of the New York Times are the two best in the business as far as giving advice. But in this case, because of the intricacies you've already talked about of Belmont, I have to go with Dullahan because he does have rest after the Derby, and a mile and a half is just a killer. Otherwise, somebody would have nailed it since 1978. And finally, I had the great pleasure of seeing the best horse in history, in my opinion, running the Preakness, and that was Secretariat. And thank you so much for taking my call.
All right, Cal, thanks very much for the call. So he likes Dullahan.
Well, Dullahan is the type of horse who often looks better on paper than he actually does running in the Belmont. The horses who make that big late charge in the Kentucky Derby always get racing fans saying, boy, this is going to be my Belmont horse. But they don't necessarily sustain that big late run in the Belmont, and they've historically burned a lot of money.
not yours that much. Andy Beyer is the horse racing columnist for the Washington Post. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go next to Marilyn, and Marilyn's with us, Manning in South Carolina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I pick my horses by, well, I used to be an exercise girl back in my youth, and I study their genetics. And then I usually go by picking the colors of the jockeys.
The silks?
Yep. And I usually go with green. Because as far as I'm concerned, with the amount of doping that's going on in the racing anymore, and you just got to look at the one that's the favorite right now, who's got, I mean, his jockey's in trouble, his trainer's in trouble, his owner's in trouble, et cetera, et cetera. Then I'm just going to go with, you know, whoever's wearing the shade of green that I like for the Belmont.
Well, Marilyn, thanks very much for the call. She raises a
May I interject something here, Neil?
Absolutely.
You know, the newspapers have been filled with stories about this cheating trainer, you know, who has now won the first two legs of the Triple Crown. There's nobody in this business who is more critical of drug abuse than I am. But I will say this. I have examined Doug O'Neill's record thoroughly. This guy is not a cheater. And the rap that he has been getting, you know, coming into the Belmont, that, you know, we have to have a special security barn to keep O'Neill from doping his horse, is just crazy.
He's accused of milkshaking and indeed will have to begin serving a 45-day suspension shortly after the Belmont Stakes.
The test that his horse failed is the test that got him that suspension measures the amount of carbon dioxide in the horse's body. It occurs there naturally. And what the test does is sort of measure whether you're over what appears to be like a normal amount. And if like the normal amount is 35, then this horse got a 37. This was not a case of their finding, you know, some, you know, illicit substance like cobra venom in the, you know, in the horse's blood. It was a case of, you know, he measured, you know, his carbon dioxide measured 37 instead of 35. And I looked at the record of this horse. If anybody thinks that there was any illicit intent, you know, in the horse that he got the suspension for, then they're crazy. It was like a hopeless horse who hadn't run a good race for a long time. I mean, that finished eighth in the race in question. So it was easy for people who want to, you know, put racing in the worst possible light to seize on this and say, you know, this guy is a drugger or a cheater. It's not the case here.
Let's go next to Emmy. Emmy with us from St. Louis.
Yes, I just had a question. I was reading in the paper about the nasal strips and that I'll have another use them in the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby. I was wondering if that's going to make a difference with the longer length of the Belmont and then him not having to be able to run with those.
This is a breathe right strip, the kind they advertise for colds to open your nose. But Andy Beyer, go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is a non-issue. I mean, the nasal strips are legal everywhere else, you know, except in New York. And I guess because it's the Belmont and because we're having all this talk about, illicit edges being taken by trainers, this has made headlines too, but I think this is a non-issue.
So you don't think it'll have effect on his performance?
I don't think so, no. I think the horse can breathe on his own pretty well.
Okay, just curious. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah,
sure.
This from Cindy in Mexico, New York. When visiting the racetrack, I employ this scientific approach to choosing horses. Put the program on the floor, drop a fork on it. Works great. And by the way, I use this technique with a map of the eastern United States to choose a place to live in the late 1970s and ended up in beautiful Charlottesville, Virginia.
Well, not a bad choice.
There are a lot of worse places to be. In the meantime, Andy, are you going to go up for the race, or does
I will be riding from Washington, but I'm fired up for this race. I think the sport really needs a boost coming from this horse. Contrary to what you may read in the papers, I think the whole cast of human characters associated with him is a great group. You know, I want to see him win.
Andy Beyer, as always, thanks very much.
Good talking to you, Neil. Bye-bye.
Washington Post horse racing columnist Andy Beyer joined us by smartphone from his home in Washington, D.C. From nearby Washington, he'll be covering the Belmont Stakes on Saturday afternoon. Tomorrow, it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here. We'll see you again on Monday. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.